Okay, so we can read tonight from chapter 10, verse number 9. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Mat Chitta Mat Gata Prana.
Mat Chitta Mat Gata Prana.
Bodhayantak Paraspara.
Bodhayantak Paraspara.
Katayantas Chamam Nityam. Tushyanti charamanti cha. Mat chitta mad gata prana.
Mat chitta mad gata prana.
Bodhayantak
parasparam. Bodhayantak parasparam.
Katayantas chamam nityam.
Katayantas chamam nityam.
Tushyanti charamanti cha.
Tushyanti charamanti cha.
Matchittaha.
Matchittaha.
Their minds fully engaged in me.
Their minds fully engaged in me.
Madgata pranaha.
Madgata pranaha.
Their lives devoted to me.
Their lives devoted to me.
Bodhayanta.
Bodhayanta.
Preaching.
Preaching.
Parasparam.
Parasparam.
Among themselves.
Among themselves.
Katayantaha.
Katayantaha.
Talking. Talking.
Talking.
Cha. Also.
Also.
Mam. About me.
About me.
Nityam.
Nityam.
Perpetually.
Perpetually.
Tushyanti.
Tushyanti.
Become pleased.
Become pleased.
Cha. Also.
Also.
Ramanti.
Ramanti.
Enjoy transcendental bliss. Cha. Also. Okay. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Purport. Pure devotees, whose characteristics are mentioned here, engage themselves fully in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Their minds cannot be diverted from the lotus feet of Krishna. Their talks are solely on the transcendental subject. The symptoms of the pure devotees are described in this verse specifically. Devotees of the Supreme Lord are 24 hours daily engaged in glorifying the qualities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Their hearts and souls are constantly submerged in Krishna, and they also take pleasure in discussing Him with other devotees. In the preliminary stage of devotional service, they relish the transcendental pleasure from the service itself. And in the mature stage, they are actually situated in love of God. Once situated in that transcendental position, they can relish the highest perfection which is exhibited by the Lord in His abode. Lord Chaitanya likens transcendental devotional service to the sowing of a seed in the heart of the living entity. There are innumerable living entities traveling throughout the different planets of the universe, and out of them there are a few who are fortunate enough to meet a pure devotee and get the chance to understand devotional service. This devotional service is just like a seed. And if it is sown in the heart of a living entity, and if he goes on hearing and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, that seed fructifies, just as the seed of a tree fructifies with regular watering. The spiritual plant of devotional service gradually grows and grows until it penetrates the coverings of the material universe and enters the Brahma Jyoti effulgence in the spiritual sky. In the spiritual sky, also, that plant grows more and more until it reaches the highest planet, which is called Goloka Vrindavan, the supreme planet of Krishna. Ultimately, the plant takes their shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna and rests there. Gradually, as a plant grows fruits and flowers, that plant of devotional service also produces fruit. And the watering process in the form of chanting and hearing goes on. This verse describes what the pure devotees do. And especially those devotees who are in the class called Bhajanandi, Goshchanandi rather. Those who like to come together with other devotees to perform their devotional service. This is the basic meaning of the term Sankirtana. Sankirtana is described in Srimad Bhagavatam as the dharma for Kali Yuga. If we want to reach the Supreme, if we want to dedicate ourselves to the personality of Godhead, we have to follow the appropriate method. Method may vary according to time and circumstance. But the general principle is, for this age, for Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel, in which people are least qualified for any kind of spiritual activity, if you want Krishna, you have to approach him through Harinam Sankirtan, through the glorification of his names, his qualities, his pastimes, and his devotees. But Sankirtana is defined by Srila Jiva Goswami in his Bhagavat Sandarbha. It's in his commentary, his sub-commentary on the Tattva Sandarbha, the very first book of his explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam. He gives the definition, Bahubir, Bahubir Militva, Sri Krishnasya Kirtanam, glorification of Krishna, done by many devotees who come together congregationally. Prabhupada translates the term Sankirtana as congregational chanting. So the term comes from Christianity, congregation. But we're using it. Devotees come together to chant, not just by themselves, but in the company of others. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu initiated this process. He came together with dozens of devotees in the house of Srivas Thakur. If you've been there in Mayapur, it's not necessarily a very big house. The original house is not there, but the property is not that big. The house, whatever was there before, could not have been that big. Still, dozens of devotees crowded in, intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not open to the public. The first Sankirtans were held behind closed doors. The neighborhood was hostile. There were many envious brahmanas, tantrics, people who, you know, would cause trouble. So they closed the doors and perform kirtan within the house in private among the intimate devotees for 1 year, every night, in the house of Srivas Thakur. That was the beginning
of the Sankirtan movement. And from there it spread, but it began in Srivath Thakur's house. But it was a program of all the devotees coming together and very loudly together chanting and dancing in glorification of Krishna. This is not some kind of exclusive private meditation, nirjana bhajana. Followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also do that. They also stay by themselves sometimes. They may live in a cave or wander around Vrindavan or Mayapur and stay secluded and chant their japa. And if they're advanced enough, they can actually meditate on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So they're the bhajananandis who like to, by themselves, perform, in a secluded place, worship Krishna. But the general mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers is to come together. Not a formal thing. We don't have pews in our churches, these benches where you have to sit down and bow on the floor, and the priest comes and puts a cracker in your mouth. No, that's not such a formal thing. Devotees come together, just like coming together in various houses, having kirtan, chanting Krishna's names, saying something about Krishna, speaking something, and honoring Krishna's prasadam, worshipping Krishna's deity. This is the whole process. This is the process for becoming perfect in this age. It doesn't require special priests to administer the ceremonies. Anybody can do it. And it's not just the business of neophytes. It's not just, because we're not fit to practice yoga, or we're not fit to do anything sophisticated, therefore we just do this simple thing. No. This is also what the most advanced devotees like to do. Do the same thing that we're doing here. Come together, even just in someone's house, and enjoy glorifying Krishna. Mat chitta, this verse says, mat chitta mad gata prana. These devotees who perform some kirtana, especially the ones who are pure, the very advanced devotees who are associates, personal associates of the Lord, when they perform the same process, they're swimming in the ocean of prema. They're fit to serve Krishna in pure love. But what can you do to serve Krishna, especially in this Kali Yuga, on the earth in general, even in any age? What can you do that will actually please Krishna? Practically everything that we can do can be done better in the spiritual world. We might like to cook for Krishna, but Krishna's being taken care of by hundreds and thousands of transcendental goddesses of fortune in Vaikuntha, in Goloka. Vaikuntha, there are all the queens of the Lakshmis of Vaikuntha. And even in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna is being taken care of by hundreds and thousands of cowherd ladies. When he's an infant, he's taken care of by his mother and the elder ladies. When he grows up, he has his girlfriends, and they are taking care of him. Srimati Radharani, even when she's young, is cooking for Krishna every day. This was arranged. Mother Yashoda heard that this girl living over there in Barshana has been blessed by, who was it who blessed? Durvasa Muni. That whatever she cooks will taste like nectar. So therefore, Mother Yashoda called for her, asked her mother, please send your girl to my son's house to cook for him. And so Srimati Radharani would cook for Krishna every day, even when they were children. So Krishna has the best cooks in the universe, or outside of the best cooks in the spiritual world, cooking for him. What does he need? Something from us then. Some rice and rotis from us. Some dal. He's getting already fed, by the best cooks. But
he's happy to come to take some service. But if we want to do that kind of service for Krishna, better we go to the spiritual world. What's the use of doing that here? What can you do for Krishna in the material world that can't be done better in the spiritual world? I can only think of two activities. Killing demons. You know, most of Krishna's avatars come with their weapons and they use them to destroy those who are harassing the devotees. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is coming in a unique mood. He's not shedding any blood. He's not killing anybody. He almost killed Jagai and Madhai, but he was dissuaded by Nityananda Prabhu. Therefore, killing demons is not really an option. Not if you want to. If you want to serve in the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you want to participate in his lila, you'll have to forego that activity also. That leaves only one activity that I can think of, that a service to Krishna that cannot be done better in the spiritual world. And that's preaching. We have conditioned souls here who need to be enlightened. That situation doesn't exist in the spiritual world. So that's, for now, is basically the only justification we can give for still being in this material world if we engage in some preaching activity. What does that preaching, what should it consist of? It should be based on Harinam Sankirtan. Notice that Prabhupada, the verse is talking, Krishna is talking about devotees coming together and experiencing transcendental pleasure. So these are devotees who are capable of experiencing ecstasy. They're not materialistic devotees. Mature, advanced devotees. And Krishna says, bodhayantak parasparam. They are enlightening one another. But notice Prabhupada's gloss in the word-for-word synonyms on the word bodhayantak. He says it means preaching. Preaching among one another. So you may be frustrated that you have nobody to preach to. The devotees can come together and preach to each other. This is Prabhupada's take on what Krishna is describing here. And you don't have to have something fancy to say. Just glorifying Krishna, even just chanting his names, is bodhayantak parasparam, enlightening one another. Katayantas chamam nityam. And the symptom of mature devotees is that they, when they open their mouth, they say something that will make whoever he's talking to understand Krishna better, feel it more attracted to Krishna. We may not directly be talking about Krishna's pastimes all the time. That's not always appropriate. We very often have other things we have to discuss for Krishna's service. Sometimes you're talking to people who are not ready to appreciate Krishna's intimate pastimes. It's recommended, especially by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada, that we avoid discussing Krishna's intimate pastimes among neophytes, among people who have a sentiment for serving Krishna but are not fixed up and following the principles, who are not ready to hear these intimate things. We should avoid discussing in the general public about very intimate topics of Krishna's pastimes. Prabhupada didn't. If you listen to Prabhupada's lectures on tapes, you read his books, he doesn't discuss Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis. He discusses basic things about how you're not this body and how we're all eternal Krishna, servants of Krishna. Basic things. It's not that Prabhupada was ignorant of Krishna's intimate pastimes. He is constantly meditating on them. But when it comes to discussing in public, he avoids, the pure devotees avoid discussing things that are too intimate for the general public. It has to be appropriate.
always saying something that will make the hearers more Krishna conscious. It may be this basic preaching. It may just be encouraging the devotees in their service. It can be many things, but it always serves, whatever we speak about, should serve the purpose of making one another more Krishna conscious. And that idea of encouraging is very important. Why should we ever say anything that would discourage somebody in Krishna consciousness? What excuse do we have of ever doing such a thing? Yeah. So if we're actually compassionate and we're actually thinking about what we're doing and what we're saying, we should try always only to encourage one another. It's difficult, but it's a crime for devotees to be discouraged. Our devotional creepers, the progress of the devotional creeper is being discussed in this purport to this verse. That creeper is very delicate, very vulnerable in its early growth. Can be trampled, can be damaged very easily. The faith of a young devotee, I mean a devotee who is, you know, young in his progress, can be easily disrupted. He can be easily discouraged. So we should be careful, not especially the young new devotees. We shouldn't make them feel discouraged in Krishna consciousness. This verse is describing devotees coming together in unity, you know, in harmony. We may not see that in our own lives as much. We may see conflicts. But that's not the real business of Vaishnavas, to be fighting with one another. It's very unfortunate. Of course, in trying to execute Krishna consciousness in the material world, there will be conflicts of interest, there will be quarrels, disagreements. But we have to keep in mind that we're all working for the same purpose. And we shouldn't take our quarrels too seriously. Sometimes tempers may flare, but we shouldn't let them, we shouldn't maintain if there's any bad feelings, it should pass quickly. We shouldn't hold on to it. We should be ready to forgive, even when devotees do horrible things to one another. The saintly quality, the brahminical quality, is to forgive, no matter how bad it is. One who is able to forgive can feel compassion. You need two qualifications to be able to feel compassion. One who has compassion, he will work selflessly for the preaching mission. But he has to feel compassion. And to feel compassion, you have to, first of all, feel satisfied in yourself. If you're dissatisfied, if you're frustrated and discouraged, then how are you going to feel concern for others? You're too busy feeling sorry for yourself. So first of all, you have to be satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Because not satisfied materially. If you're proud and confident, overconfident of your material abilities, then that's not the qualification. That's disqualification. Then you'll be thinking of how to use people for your purposes, how to exploit them, rather than how to help them. But if you're simply feeling satisfied because you're serving Krishna and you can feel dependent on Krishna, Krishna is taking care of you, and you feel satisfied with that, not arrogant, not proud. Then you have there's a possibility of developing compassion. So we have to be forgiving. That's the other qualification. We can't take too seriously the abuses that are committed against us. So this is actually summarized in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshastaka. Amanina manadena kirtaniyaksada hari. Someone
can go on perpetually engaging in this Nam Sankirtan, can forever chant Krishna's names. If he's Amani, he's not expecting that others are going to glorify him. He's not looking for respect. A proud person is looking, you know, that everybody is going to honor and worship him. He's calculating in everything he does and everything he says how his audience is going to react and how it's going to affect his, you know, ratings in the popularity polls. That's the way a politician behaves. It's not the behavior of Vaishnav. Amani, not calculating and looking for how people will worship him. I'm not the object of worship. The pure devotees, my spiritual master, the Supreme Lord, they're the objects of worship. I'm just their humble servant. That should be the attitude. So not expecting respect from anyone, but being ready to give respect to everyone else. Even those who abuse us. We may sometimes have to fight, and fight vigorously, to defend the truth, to defend the honor of the pure devotees, and to carry out the instructions of the pure devotees. We have to stand on our principles, and that sometimes requires fighting. But the fighting doesn't have to be done with hatred. The Pandavas didn't hate their enemies. Bhima was angry, but he wasn't inimical. Yudhishthir is famous as a Jatashatru, he who had no enemies. But he had so many enemies. He had the worst enemies. And he fought to defeat his enemies. How can you say he's a Jatashatru? Because he didn't have hatred, even for Duryodhan. He didn't think that this person is standing in the way of my success, of my having the kingdom. I must destroy him at all costs. He never thought like that. That's why the Battle of Kurukshetra didn't occur for many, many years. There was, you know, the stalemate went on and on. Yudhishthira, Bhima could have killed all of them, you know, before there was any exile. But for at least 13 years of exile and for other years, the Pandavas simply tolerated all those abuses. Because Yudhishthira didn't think that so-and-so, in particular Duryodhan, is standing in the way of my sense gratification, therefore he has to be destroyed. He never thought like that. He fought, and his brothers fought with him, and they fought most vigorously, but without hatred. They were always willing to forgive. So that's the way we're expected to be. Not expecting to be worshipped, but being ready to honor everybody at least as they deserve to be honored. There's no real harm in giving someone more respect than he deserves. At least if you do it in a simple heart. If you do it just to flatter someone with the intention of exploiting him, then that's not very proper. That's just manipulative. You know, to flatter for the purpose of using someone for your purposes. But with a simple heart, if you offer more respect than is actually due, there's no great harm in that. But when we disrespect Vaishnavas, it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous for our delicate devotional creepers. Vaishnava aparad is the most dangerous thing we can do. So better always to show respect to Vaishnavas. When we use the word Prabhu, we should remember what it means. It means master, yes. So we shouldn't
shouldn't, just as we cannot consider the Supreme Lord an object of our manipulation, you cannot consider the abode of the Lord as another place for material exploitation, another marketplace or playground for you. When you go to Krishna's abode, to Vrindavan, to Mayapur, don't expect shopping centers and amusement parks. It's not a place to go shopping or to enjoy yourself. It's not a place for exploitation, as are the material cities. We're living, I'm just visiting here, but you're living in, I was born in a bigger city, New York City. This is, you know, trying to, the city is catching up with New York and the other big cities of the world. But it's a place, these big cities of the world, especially the modern world, are places for exploitation and sense gratification. The Vaishnavas who are living in them have to be very careful not to be caught up in the demoniac spirit of these cities. But the abode of the Lord is never, should never be approached like that. It's not another place for sense gratification or some place where you find, you know, the means to pursue your selfish purposes. So you won't find, although unfortunately in Vrindavan today you will find shopping malls and so on. But the way that the abode of the Lord is meant to be, and as you usually find it, it's a place simply to serve the Lord. So Krishna is not a person to be exploited, to be abused, to be used for your purposes. His place is not a place to be used for your purposes. It's for his purposes. And similarly, Krishna's devotees are not people to be used for your selfish purposes. They shouldn't be judged as friends and enemies. They are servants of the Supreme Lord, all the Vaishnavas. And therefore, the same respect we show to God himself, and we have to show to his personal abode, and to his names, and to his deity, also should be shown to all the Vaishnavas, big and small. They're Krishna's people. Just like we're living in Vrajadam, we have to be very careful with our neighbors, the Vrajbasis. We may not understand at all what they're doing. You know, we wonder what kind of devotees they are, but we have to be very careful. They're Krishna's people, no matter how what their behavior is. They're very dear to Krishna. And we should think like that about all the Vaishnavas. Amanina manadina, always offering appropriate respect. Everybody has minimal respect that he deserves. If any human being should be allowed his life. We have no business in taking the life, actually, of any creature, any living being, unnecessarily. Human beings deserve more respect than that. Not only are you expected not to just kill a human being for no good reason, you also have to treat him with certain decent respect. There are ways you deal with human beings. You can yell at a dog or kick a dog in the street, but you don't do that with a human being, even a low-class human being. You have to, even the lowest human being, you have to treat him with some decent respect. And then among the human beings, the brahmanas have to be shown special respect. If you displease a brahmana, you're in trouble. Krishna warned his sons about that. Even though they're the sons of God, Krishna warned them very severely, don't displease the Brahmins. Don't touch their property. But the Vaishnavas are superior to ordinary Brahmanas. So when dealing with any Vaishnava, we have to be super careful to show them appropriate respect. I'm late, so I won't go into the details of what that is. You can study Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita. Krishneta eti yasya giritam manasadvieta. Very quickly, if anybody has ever chanted Hare Krishna, even if he's not following the regulative principles, even if he's deviant, you should offer respect, at least in your mind. The devotee may be dangerous to associate with, even. So stay, keep your distance, but always have a respectful attitude in your mind. And if he's properly following, then you must consider him your master. You must treat him with proper respect. We bow down to one another. And we should be careful not to abuse one another. And then if someone is a pure devotee, a Paramahamsa, who has no trace of envy, then you have to be ready to dedicate your whole life to that person's service. So that, anyway, that's basically the in three divisions how we have to treat Vaishnavas. We have to show them appropriate respect always.
Okay, excuse me for going so long. We'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that if one is doing a particular work, a job,
yes,
that is his prescribed duty in that particular system. Like if he's, according to the Varna, if and the Ashrama, if somebody is working somewhere, he should not change his prescribed duty or work. He should continue in the same job and then take up to devotional life if he is inspired.
Generally, that doesn't mean it's forbidden to change your job. You know, sometimes there are circumstances in which you should make a change. What if someone wants to become a devotee, but he's a butcher? Yeah, so sometimes it's better to change. Some activities, you know, just cannot be dovetailed. How are you going to dovetail being a butcher in Krishna's service? Better you change your job. Or make some adjustment, yeah. But, so it's in what Lord Brahma is saying, sthane sthita, stay in your position. Not, it's not a demand, a command that you must stay in your position, but you don't have to change unless it's just something that can't be offered to Krishna. No way. You know, if your occupation is just too sinful. But we have cases of even prostitutes and others, thieves, who are devotees of Krishna. It's a bit irregular for someone engaged in criminal activity to be serving Krishna, but Krishna can accept. Depends on the attitude of the individual. We may be engaged in activities that are technically sinful. And we're doing some business that involves breaking, you know, that involves people engaging in breaking the principle, even though we're not breaking them. It's not good, but we may not be free to change the situation. Krishna can understand if we're unavoidably indirectly engaged with sinful activities. But it's better if we can avoid that. You know, we shouldn't be engaged in business that directly promotes breaking the four regular principles, even if we're not breaking them ourselves. We should try to avoid that. Okay. Yes. Anything else?
Dealing with the stock market is considered breaking the regulator principle?
You know, I don't know what Prabhupada's judgment on that was. I can't say. It's technically gambling, but so is all kinds of business. And it's understood that someone who's a businessman has to do things like that. He has to speculate. Prabhupada commented that a salesman has to lie. He has to tell his customer, I'm making no profit, or, you know, give the impression. Are you going to advertise that I only paid so much for it, I'm charging you this much, and I'm making so much profit? You know, you don't disclose that information. Otherwise, you're not going to be successful in selling things. So there's always deception involved in doing any kind of, you know, money transaction. What can you do? You know, according whenever position you're in, there's no activity is ideal in the material world. Sahajam karma konteya sadosham api natyajit. The activity that is natural for your conditioning, even if it's full of fault, you shouldn't, you know, give it up. At least until it's obvious that you know Krishna makes an arrangement that you can make a change for a better situation. So, I mean, you asked specifically about dealing in the stock market. I'm not familiar with what Prabhupada actually said about that. I'm not sure. Yeah.
In business,
but all kinds of business involve similar speculations.
There may be deception, but
we don't
speculate in business. I mean, here, you know, like.
But you take risks. You know, that's gambling. If you don't take any risks, how are you going to make a profit?
There is a lot of anxiety involved. Is that
But it's gambling. That's the thing. It's technically gambling to do any business, any kind of entrepreneurial business. You know, if you're staking your capital with the hope of it being increased, that's gambling, technically. But that's also a business. If you're going to be a businessman, you're going to be doing business. If you're a warrior, you're going to be killing people. You know, which is technically, you know, murder. But soldiers are not faulted for doing their business, and businessmen are not faulted for doing their business. You know, you should try to be as honest as is possible without ruining your business. You know, but no activity in this world is ever perfect. You just have to do what's necessary, and you're not going to be faulted for just doing your duty. It may be technically gambling. All kinds of business, you know, speculation is also technically gambling, but how can you avoid it?
Stock in the stock market is a different kind of speculation. The mind is more agitated. I mean, you know, you're waiting, you're looking for quick gains.
Yes. Okay, so that's
it. Business, it's more, I mean, it's not like that. The nature of business is like you are investing, you're spending some time, energy, and gradually you're getting some returns.
Okay.
But in the stock market, people are expecting very quick money, like quick returns.
Okay.
And
so that's
more chances of losing also.
Yeah, so such a, you know, extreme form of speculation, more passionate, better avoided then. You know, a more ideal business would be something a little slanted toward the mode of goodness, certainly. If you can do a simple business that doesn't require, you know, grand speculation and, you know, and grand deception, then that, of course, would be better. But we're not always free, you know, to pick the ideal situation. Arjuna was arguing as a moralist. Better I avoid this fight. And Krishna rejected his arguments. He said, you have so many reasons why you think that it's sinful to proceed, but I have other ideas. I've got my plans. And if you just execute my plans, then you're doing the right thing. Then I'll be satisfied. Otherwise, you're in trouble. So, it's dangerous to put aside the duty that's our prescribed duty and try to pick up someone else's duty. It's very bhayavaha, dangerous. It's a reason, you know, it causes real anxiety when we reject our duty. Just like someone prematurely wants to take sannyas because his family is a botheration. He goes off wearing saffron, and because he hasn't defeated his sex urge, he ends up engaging in illicit sex in the holy place. We see that happening many times. So many so-called sadhus are there with, you know, with their second wives, you know, out in public, you know, in the holy places. This is abominable. So such men should not leave their families prematurely, who are not ready for it. So it's always dangerous to because it's faulty, to abandon your responsibilities. Because you'll end up doing something worse. If we're fixed in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna will gradually free us from all the imperfections of our life. Things will become purified, but by staying, you know, strictly engaged in Krishna consciousness, not by doing whimsical things. Yes, Prabhu?
Is it better to preach what we know, or is it better to get involved in bodhayantam parasparam? It means to increase one's knowledge.
Oh, okay. No, why not increase your knowledge? You're never too old to learn. Devotees should increase our understanding of Krishna because we want to become more attracted to him. We shouldn't be acquiring information just to impress people so we can get their respect and control them. That's abuse of knowledge. So we should take knowledge, we should be cultivating and looking for more and more understanding of Krishna, but not for the wrong reasons, not just to get power and control over people. But no, I don't see any reason why not to try to learn more and more about Krishna. If that's what you're talking about, yeah. Certainly. Even if you're 80 years old, it's never too late to learn more about Krishna. Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.